Cropod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for anyone, but what is suitable for everybody is the great stuff from our friends at The Famous, iconic wear for bears. Go check out thefamousheadwear.co.uk. Great stuff over there. And if you want to win some stuff from them, scroll down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes on this episode that you're listening to right now. We give away stuff from them every single month here on the Cropod. So check them out, thefamousheadwear.co.uk.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm not following your line of questioning.
All right, welcome back to another edition of Don't Ask Me No Questions here on the Cropod. Was it Wednesday, October 25th, day ahead of our return to Prague and the racist hellhole that we get to go to on an annual basis now. We change managers and we get to go deal with these fuckwits every goddamn year. But back for another round, as I said, we got DJ. Hey, Danny, what's going on, brother?
Hi, Shane. Not much. Yourself? All good?
Yeah, it's all right. You know, cloudy, piss-poor day in Rockford. So that means it's probably a cloudy, piss-poor day in Toronto, if I had to guess.
Yep. All the same.
Back to the freezing cold before we go.
Every show, I know what his weather is because it's exactly what mine about 30 hours before. So.
Well, if it's Scotland, you usually just wait a week or two and then suddenly it's just as shit. So, yeah.
Well, I saw today that there was an MSP blaming the fact that the rain came from the other direction and they just weren't quite ready for that because,
well, yeah,
that's how flooding works.
that's how flooding works. although as a secret carry on, try not to be Aberdonian. I'm very much used to when the rain comes in from the east, it is just an absolute shit show. I mean, there's an element of truth to that. I don't think it has anything to do with flooding. So,
no,
back at it.
I think only when it's like hurricane. Oh my god, I swear to Christ, man! Like by the time we did, so in between the time we did the Cropod yesterday, and I got done like cleaning up after dinner in the evening, right? And, you know, I think a lot of people have been around here for years. Like, you guys know I used to cover weather events and shit like this. It was something that was part of my job as a journalist. Yeah. That storm that hit Acapulco went from just like a run-of-the-mill tropical storm that literally no forecasting model had growing even into a hurricane to a Category 5 hurricane that has fucking leveled that goddamn town. I mean, that's... See, now that could catch you off guard, regardless of what direction it's coming from. But no, rain just happening to come from the other way.
But I'm glad I live in a place where that's not really a major risk. But at the same time, yeah, I do remember you standing in the aftermath of hurricanes doing that coverage. So yeah.
Yeah, it's always fun.
Good weather chat for the listeners.
Yeah. Well, we got plenty of football chat because, of course, we won at the weekend. Covered a lot of that, but we've got more to go through. And, again, the match coming up tomorrow as, I think we're going to burn through the football here in the second half because, again, we have to talk about, why it wasn't okay that Glenn Kamara was, you know, racially abused for going to work. And then, of course, the response to all that, which still continues to this day and crept into other fan media yesterday, which I was just... Anyway, second, we'll get to that shit in the second half. But on the front, of course, Borna's out. Sterling's out. and Ridvin not available for selection. So the first question, how fucking dumb is Michael Beal?
Well, he's not very smart. Well, somebody posted something in our group chat the other day saying about people that have a higher body fat percentage being a bit more impulsive. And if ever there was a case study for it, it was definitely Michael Beal.
I guess Tom Lawrence has played one Europa League match at least, but you know, he was always gonna be it's more evidence of the fact that we're much better off without him. But I don't, what do we end up doing tomorrow? I mean, it's probably going to be Ben Davies on the left and a very Sasa Papach-esque kind of a... Can we not just go get him for one match?
Yeah.
I mean, his neck's got to be fine by now, right?
Don't insult Sasa Papach like that, right? Ben Davies could never.
a 5.5 out of 10 instead of the 7 out of 10. But you know, the general concept.
maybe a lower score than that. Not Ben Davies' biggest fan, if I'm honest.
No.
I'd actually much rather it was Adam Devine.
I think he's the other option there.
I think at least he's quite mobile. He should get up and down the wing. I don't think he'd be scared of getting forward either. He wasn't spectacular when he last had a run of games, but he wasn't awful.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're shooting for at the moment because the options are limited. But
when you're this limited in options, that you just a warm body that will fill the hole.
Somebody that can move and actually get us up the pitch, because Borna certainly doesn't do that. And it's funny because he's decided to pick the one time where there's a bit of pressure to duck out of a game again.
Yeah, he made 11 minutes under the new manager before he just went, oh, fuck. Oh, it hurts. Look at that. What hurts? I don't know.
This guy shouts at me. This guy shouts at me for playing sideways passes. I don't like him. I don't want to play. By the way, I don't really have a problem with Borna the same way that most people seem to. I think, we spent, £4 million, potentially more, because we made the Champions League group stages somehow last season on Ridvan, who is never available and by all accounts hasn't contributed anywhere near as much as Borna has in recent times, even at his worst. It's like the kind of Mireles argument, oh well, we got rid of him, that's great, but who's left in his place? It's the same with Borna and Ridvan. I think anytime we try and actually spend money to replace somebody, we tend to make things worse. But I mean, who knows? Maybe Ridvan will come good under another manager. But
we
won't find out tomorrow night. Eh?
No. I mean, I think when he came on, he was one of the guys that really looked like, hey, I've got a chance to do something now, because obviously Beal, I'm trying not to think about him. But I mean, he completely froze him out, and it's like, as you said, all in. Probably around £5 million after all the add-ons and everything that we would have to pay for him. And then immediately didn't play him, wasn't featuring, was down the fucking B-side. Just straight out the fucking door. And it's like, I can understand, in the same way that, Roof's injury suddenly got even more consistent toward the end there, why Ridvan was kind of, checked out, I guess.
Mm-hmm. What was I about to say? Completely out of mind.
It's only his second day, folks. It's okay.
Finding my feet. Sorry.
You gotta get minutes in the legs. That's what you need. Minutes in the legs.
Not on a Kmart roof getaway. I'll be out of action once I get minutes in my legs. The thing with Ridvan was it not suggested recently that Beal actually identified him long before he left. He was known to the club because of Beal in some sort of way.
Yeah,
at least that's what was suggested. Which is right. So he's your guy essentially. Then you didn't sign him, so you can absolve yourself of any problems. But he's still your guy technically.
Yeah,
and much like some of his other signings that he decided to kind of bomb out for a short period before he left. It's not really a good reflection of you standing by your business and trying to get the most out of those players, because that's what we expected of Beal, to get a lot more out of the players than we've seen, which kind of happened when he came in after Gio left with the older players, but none of his new signings certainly. And I think Ridwan still falls into that category. He's a signing that we've been waiting to see something from, and there's just been nothing maybe until the weekend.
Yeah.
And even then, let's see.
But, yeah. All right. Well, but I think this all goes back to the issue that Clement identified immediately, mm-hmm. which is the fact that none of our players are fit. And yeah, was definitely, obviously wasn't Beal's remit under Gerrard. Levels had clearly slipped under Gio, but the cratering of them under Beal's short time, we talked about it last week a little bit. We talked about it yesterday on the big show with David and Todd, and it's like this was one of the key factors. This is why we won the league by 7th of March, and for 55 was that we were just by far the fittest team on the park. Fall away that quick, oh God.
It's that, but it was also evident when Gio was still here, the European run. Some of that was psychological, because they could only ever seem to raise their game for those games rather than domestic stuff. But I mean, there's a reason we were able to go 120 minutes back to back between who was it again? against Celtic in the semi final in particular, and then face up against European opposition at the same time. Yeah. I think that was kind of a legacy from Gerrard, and I think it was Milson that was the fitness coach, wasn't he? So,
right,
whatever they did in the season previously, that I think somehow that carried on despite Gio's terrible pre-season. Whereas you're seeing the kind of remnants of Gio's legacy now. Whatever Beal did in the summer to try and whip them into shape didn't work. But then there's also the fact that, again, legacy issues. We have to think about Ross Wilson's part in that.
Right.
Because did he not empty half of that medical staff at one point?
Yeah.
Shortly after Gerrard and everybody had left. I still don't understand the logic there. I assume, and I hate to assume this fairly consistently with the club at the moment, but it seemed like a cost-cutting thing. There were guys that were in that team that went down to Premier League clubs. So
yeah. Well, I think, you know, we've seen that fairly across the board. You know, we've touched on the legal department being stripped out. Now that it's like, we look at the continuity plan or succession plan in terms of a manager and everything, all the data driven sheets and whatnot that we had to arrive at the conclusion here. The same can be said in every single department. In the club, and like you said, the medical staff has never really been rebuilt. I mean, we brought in Waller in the summer, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to be operating at the capacity it was at in, say, 19 through 21 through those years. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, because there was an awful lot fewer injuries back then, even. You look at guys like Tavin Goldson, who have been mainstays in the team that have never really had any injury problems, and suddenly it happens virtually the minute that Gerrard leaves and his team leaves. And those guys doing whatever they were doing right are no longer there. There's nobody else that's doing it, obviously. So whatever they've done in the meantime has not been good enough. And now you've got a manager that's evidently telling everybody publicly that it's not good enough. Telling us at the weekend that a lot of the players don't really have the 90 minutes in their legs to do what he's asking them to do, which is pretty damn clear. But it's just, like you said, it's the same across the club. These things are top down. Every facet of the club has to be operating at a decent level to actually achieve these things. And if you bring in a manager that you're expecting to just, make it all gel and glue together I'm not sure how well that's going to go.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much that Phil can ask for, and only so much that he'll be given.
Well, so I guess
that, I don't know. I don't know where that goes.
Well, I mean, in that vein, I mean, one thing he could immediately control was, you know, how the team was set out the weekend, and you know, the play. I think when we saw Scott Wright, all of us went fuck. But then, of course, you go, well, I mean, who else is he going to get 60 minutes out of out there that's just going to run? You know, and I mean, God, he did his job. Like, you know, we were obviously better when he came off, but he did. He gave us a Scott Wright ship. So, I mean, what did you see at the weekend? In the 4-0 here, that I guess gave me confidence that you saw as, you know, positive or negative. I don't know. I mean, there weren't too many negatives outside the individuals. I think tactically, everything looked about right.
Yeah, it did. And it's hard to tell nowadays. You kind of just have to look at the performance rather than the scoreline, because it could have been 2-0 or 6-0.
Right.
It doesn't really matter nowadays, because I'm saying that it does matter, but it doesn't. These teams are not very good. You should be beating them very comfortably at home, especially with Hibs. Hibs kind of are not as compact as the other teams in the league, so you're always going to get chances. The fear is always, like, if we're ever going to put chances away nowadays. So, and thankfully we did. But I think the main contributor to that was the fact that we got an early goal, because this team, anytime they struggle to get that first goal, they decline in confidence, they lose momentum, you know, they just fall off a cliff edge. Which, to their, you know, you can say that the other way around, to their credit, they built on a 1-0 lead and they went on and won the game very comfortably without any trouble. Whereas in the past, they've been quite susceptible to going 1 or 2-0 up and taking the foot off the gas and just letting the game slide away and other teams getting into it. So really positive from that point of view that they kept up their momentum. I think they're responding very quickly to the manager and his demands. But it really depends where it goes from here. There was a bit more intensity in the team, and they were a bit further forward, a bit higher up the pitch at times. And I think that's only going to serve you well, regardless of whether it's Hibs or Killy or whoever and how they set up. You know, these teams are there for the beating. You have to get up and at them. And thankfully we did. But I can't take too much from the game at the same time.
No.
There's a lot of joyous chat at the moment about Big Phil, which I'm for, but let's give it a run of games first.
I mean, there were a couple points of emphasis. I mean, one, we saw the return to, we're going to cycle everything through Tav on the right, and we're going to wait patiently until something opens up over there. But then, two, I mean, Raskin's goal, which I mean, when just racking the brain, and I'm probably overlooking an obvious one, when was the last time one of our midfielders just had a hit from like 30 yards and scored?
I can't recall him doing that. I seen him early days when he arrived. He was trying to get up and forward and get into the box, and Beale very quickly coached that out of him. Because how dare we have a midfielder that tries to do such a thing?
We need three Stephen Davises on the park at all times. That's it.
Yeah. Or rather, three John Lundstroms, apparently.
Well, yeah, Jesus. Yeah.
Fucking hell. No, it was good to see somebody having a go. And actually, to his credit, I think it was actually a very good strike.
Yeah, well, I mean, he looked up, he saw where Marshall was. He was like, all right, let me do that.
There's that, but there's a lot of people saying, like, oh, well, David Marshall was terrible. He can't get down quick enough to save his life. But actually, I don't know, maybe a better goalkeeper would have saved that. But I think it was... As far as a bit of a daisy cutter hit goes, it was as accurate as it could possibly be.
30 yards in the side netting. Well, yeah. I mean, you can't really, you know.
It was a very good finish, and you can kind of just ignore what the goalkeeper's up to. Whereas for the rest of the game, no. Thanks to David Marshall for giving us every helping hand when we were terrible in front of goal in the moment. Other than Sam Lammers, who still couldn't body score from 5 yards.
That poor kid.
It's like if you bought Joe Aribo off of Wish, and his two feet are on the opposite sides. You know, he tries all these turns, and it's It's all in vain. You can see. I did want to give him credit.
He did well in the build up to a couple of the goals. He worked hard in the press, which obviously was something that Phil was asking for, you know. But obviously, barring some dramatic miracle turnaround, you know, it's the same with Dessers too. It's great that he scored, but I mean, he looked shocked that he did it. It was like it wasn't relief. It was holy fuck! I did that. Oh my god!
It was almost impossible not to score as well because all you had to do was hit it low past Marshall.
Well, that was a crazy thing. Like, you know, I think I said on Monday show, I was he couldn't get the ball up from under his fucking feet.
No, again, like, it actually worked to his benefit because the defender didn't anticipate that.
No.
Good thing he's playing against absolute jobbers.
No, I think, you know, I mean, obviously tomorrow is a much bigger test on the park. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, limited options and selection and, you know, asking for fitness to be rebuilt in 10 days obviously cannot happen.
Nope.
So, you know, the challenges there are obviously going to rear their head a little bit more. I think how he uses his substitutions are going to be far more critical. In terms of getting players on at the right, well, getting people off at the right time, probably more than anything. Tomorrow a much bigger challenge and maybe a little bit more of a, I don't know, a high water. Well, just, you know, some kind of mark in the squad in terms of expectations going forward for matches that actually fucking matter, which, you know, if we want to get back in the league, we know exactly what those matches are coming up.
Yeah. I think, particularly with tomorrow, it shows you how much of a lift he'll get out of the team if we perform well, at the very least. Because I really didn't think there was much there. I was kind of dreading the game at the weekend. So I think if we can see a good performance tomorrow night, then it'll build a lot of momentum going forward into those games. It's a difficult run, but. Again, like you said, it's going Sunday, Thursday again, and these players are just not equipped for that. Never mind actually being good enough. I'd actually hope that you can play some of the guys that have been out for a while tomorrow. It really shouldn't be that big of a risk. I think Campbell looked good when he came on.
Yeah.
I don't think he looks like he's... You know, he doesn't look like he's been out for that long, even though he has. doesn't look it, so why not? We've got very little to risk. I would actually prioritise the games away from the league and hope that the league comes good, not on its own, but you know what I mean? I think 7 points...
Well, again, we know we have to... We got to beat them and they got to drop points. I mean, some of that's in our control. A lot of it is not. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Whereas Europe in the Cups is very much within our control if we're good enough for it. You know, we're not necessarily, unless we play Celtic in the Cup, in the Scottish Cup, we're not necessarily facing teams that are a million miles ahead of us based on evidence so far. So, although we'll find out tomorrow, I guess, because Sparta certainly look like the better team in the group.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm hoping to see much less of Dessers and Lammers as soon as possible. But from what Phil said, he was kind of like, yeah, we have the players that we have and we're just going to have to use them over the next few weeks. So
yeah, he's about as realistic as all of us are. I don't know. You know, maybe we can convince Morales' agent to cut him loose because he looks fit as fuck again down there. Man,
he quite clearly has... people that are keeping on top of that.
Yeah.
Given all that we've talked about with fitness and stuff, I think, you know, when you let Morelos run, I don't mean run riot, actually, you know, run riot on the buffet table maybe, but yeah.
Well, see, that's the thing. You can't even use the excuse that he went back to South America this time because he's been there the whole fucking time. So it's like, it doesn't work. You can't pocket that one anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Bring our Colombian son home, please.
I know. It's difficult to pine for him because you think,
no.
We shouldn't be at that stage.
No, 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 no.
But unfortunately,
but still, God damn it.
For obvious reasons. I'd much rather a Alfredo on crutches than a Cyril Dessers at his fittest. Let's be honest. The weird thing with him though is there's a lot of people that have said like, oh, you know, his record's really good. He's had a good career so far, but has he?
I think
he's one of these guys that occasionally has a purple patch of form and then just dives off the edge of the cliff every other season. I don't think he's shown any consistency through his whole time at other teams.
No.
Maybe next season he'll come good and we'll get something out of him, but not.
I don't know. Well, nothing,
I don't think anything's
look,
changing this year.
If he becomes, you know, there was never a problem with Chris Boyd scoring 25 goals a season against all the jobber clubs, because guess what?
Yeah.
We won all those matches. And some, you know, if he wants to be that guy, I'll take that guy. I don't care. Mm. But do something. Yeah. Provide something.
Well, there's that, but then why? Why? I don't know what age he is now, 28, 29, something like that.
Yeah.
why sign a guy? I know Warren Shankland isn't necessarily much younger, give or take a year, but you know, if you want somebody to do that and you're spending a few million quid on him, then go and do that instead.
Yeah.
Because I'd much rather have Warren Shankland, Danilo, and maybe one other that are levels above. Whereas I don't think any of them are particularly levels above what we had before, which was always the point of the summer. Can we actually do a rebuild and upgrade at the same time? And you know, as we said last week, we went backwards. So
no. You know, again, I mean, looking backward and sadly still having to ride this wave, as we talked about, back to Prague tomorrow, and that means racists. So we're going to take a quick break.
Lots of them.
Lots of racists. Quick break, come back, part two, and yeah, we'll have more in a minute.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, back in for part two of Don't Ask Me No Questions here on the Crow Pod. Of course, scroll down, find the Buy Me a Coffee link, or go to support.thecopelandroad.org. We're giving away stuff from our friends at The Famous, and also Blue Room Art this month, giving away stuff for supporters of the show. Unlike David Edgar's Heart and Hand, I don't beat you up for money at the front. You just get to decide whether or not to give it to me on the other end. So, but always go check out our friends, The Famous, of course, thefamousheadwear.co.uk. And Blue Room Art at blueroomart.co.uk. And of course, our good buddy over there, Graham at The Famous, designed the exclusive crow scarf. We have a fucking great looking scarf, banger of a scarf, available for pre-order now through the 5th of November. So go ahead. Again, that's all at the Buy Me a Coffee page. You can take a look there. There's a tab, you know, UK shipping, international shipping. Just make sure you pick the right one. And if if you're a monthly contributor to the show, you get a discount on that, plus any other stuff that we come up with here as we keep the show rolling. So, Danny, we had yesterday, and we all knew that this was coming, right? We knew it was coming. We of course go back to, well, Glenn Kamara being racially abused, of course, with Slavia back in March of 21, and then Well, we had Sparta's 12-year-old kids sitting there racially abusing all of our players. on the return leg. There's been some issues around the fan media, our own fan media response to this that came up yesterday that I want to get to here. But as far as, well, manager, was it Brian, was it Prisky, however the hell you say his name?
No, who cares?
Yeah, I don't care. Racist, I'm assuming. But no, yeah, he actually, I mean, he said the thing that the club didn't say in their statement here. He said, what I think is definitely important is a message from me, not just to our fans, but also to fans of Rangers. Now, you don't need to identify us, but thank you for that. We all know what happened some years ago. We need to send a signal that we're pro football and that racism doesn't belong whatsoever in football. Some years ago does not accurately describe this. No, what happened to Glenn Kamara happened 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then what happened from your fans was not some years ago. That was very, very recent, like very recent memory. You don't describe that as like something that happened in your grandfather's age. Like, we all remember this.
That's very convenient for them, isn't it? You know, to push it as far back into the past as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just Kamara either, was it? It was
in
the aftermath with Roof and his Instagram also. Comments. And, you know, I know his tackle was dangerous and it was really bloody stupid at the time because it put us a man down, but
it was funny as hell, though.
It was also funny given the reaction. But it's there's obviously never any justification for it. But of all the things to use as like some sort of justification, because I remember seeing some interactions on social media afterwards that we were talking about it, sort of our bickering, usual Twitter stuff between our support, their support. And, you know, it was almost as if it was fair game just because he put in a bad tackle.
Yeah.
And similarly, Kamara was fair game because reasons unknown entirely.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is part of what came up yesterday because, of course, you know, the Rangers Review pod, and I believe Hart and Hannah recorded episode two, this Tomas, whatever the fuck his name is. His account was Check Footy on Twitter, and I remembered this guy the second he popped back up because a lot of his defense for the abuse given to Kamara after the fact, right? Not being racially abused on the park, but the response to him after the fact was the fact that Kudela got fucking knocked the fuck out in the tunnel after the match, which, again, punching racists is good. We're okay with that. I would think, you know, a club based in Prague might have some memories of why it's important to punch Nazis in the face. But obviously, you know, they have issues around. Well, you know, that was more than some years past. That was some very years past. So that might slip the memory.
But it wasn't the club in question that we're facing tomorrow and their closest rivals.
Yes.
And somehow we've united them through all this.
Yeah.
Funny in isolation, but aside from the racism.
Saying aside racism, we brought together the divide in Czech football. But you know, I mean, that was this guy staying on these shows yesterday. And look, you know, I wanted to clarify this a little bit more because when I saw that, I think it was Derek Clark who was interviewing them for the Rangers Review. I haven't listened to or even know if Hart and Hand put their thing out with him. But not holding this guy to account, right? This is part of the problem with fan media at times. I don't have so much of a problem with the cheerleading or water carrying for different people or whatever. That's going to be expected. But the reality is, unlike me, who, you know, I kind of brought me being in the media for many years and applied that to doing this, right? But I've interviewed people before and know how to push back or when to push back or when to not let a racist try to hide it, as this guy did back then, was trying to do again in these interviews yesterday. Whereas, you know, some of these guys, when you're a fan first and media second, right? And that's how you end up with this kind of shit where, you know, look, if you can't find an expert who, you know, maybe didn't blame Glenn Kamara for being racially abused, not once, but twice, Again, as you said, by two desperate sets of supporters who fucking hate each other, but as this asshole pointed out yesterday, has united Czech football. United them in what? Say it. Fucking say it. Right?
I mean, their love for abusing white people, apparently.
It's, you know, and of course, Sparta released a statement themselves, you know, we're looking forward to hosting it. Well, no, you're not, because, you know, well, our fans have to, like, meet 27 minutes from the stadium or whatever the hell it is and be marched down by police and blah, blah, you know, like, come on, you know. None of this is okay. UEFA shouldn't be tolerating this, but of course, UEFA's sole purpose now is to see fans killed somewhere at some point. Yeah. I mean, that's what they're going for. Yeah.
They'd much rather that than dealing with the issue, because they didn't deal with it at the time with Kamara very well. As far as I can remember, it took them long enough to get a bloody response out of them. But yeah, I'm kind of dreading it, because you know, we've got Sima in the team tomorrow.
Yep.
So, you know, the excuse will be, oh, well, he's a former Slavia player. Well, yeah, but what about the fact that you're now in bed with your rivals?
Because aren't you guys united? I mean, isn't that?
I'd like to see how. I mean, I don't want it to happen at all, but it's fairly inevitable. So I'd like to understand how that's supposed to work in their tiny little minds. But yeah, I'm dreading that part. I'm dreading in general. However, they treat our players and staff tomorrow, because I don't think it's going to be particularly good.
No, I think we all know exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. I mean,
you can predict any response or lack thereof from UEFA when it does, because it feels fairly inevitable. You just need to look at any posts from the club or from any of our fans in recent days and see some of the comments and responses from them.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I've just been muting people. Well, and again, you know, as I said yesterday, you know, what I posted back up was, I mean, I had a very lengthy conversation with our friend Gordon Watson in the fallout of, you know, the initial Kamara incident, not even, you know, the follow-up from the fans with Sparta. And, you know, Gordon is a black man who has dealt with racial abuse throughout his life. Obviously, you know, down in, well, a different part of the world more often than not, but had a lot of very good I'm going to say anecdotes, because I think that takes away from it, but about his time, you know, in Russia in 2014 and what he saw there, and how much of that applies, I think, in the same vein to, exactly what we're going to see here. So, I mean, you know, if you missed that back then, not you, I know you heard it, but any listeners, if you go back, I've reposted it so you didn't have to go like fishing down through, you know, 200 fucking episodes of dick jokes. I put it right at the top of the feed yesterday. So you can find that talk with Gordon. It was very good and sadly still 100% applicable to everything that, you know, it is going to happen. I hate that because this is not an if. This is not an if. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Just first touch, it could be any non-white played on the pitch, but first touch from Sima, and you'll see exactly what's going to happen. It's, they've signposted it already, which is really just fucking depressing to even think that those people exist.
Yeah.
And it's disappointing to really look at it and say that it's a problem within that region, but it quite clearly is.
Well, I guess the question comes then, and, you know, the more we knew about how the players dealt with it, you know, in the tunnel at the time or on the pitch at the time, and also after the fact when they punched Cadella in the face. When it happens, I will never fault people that have to deal with this shit for their fucking response to it, whatever the hell they feel. But UEFA, again, is not going to fucking deal with this. I mean, we know they won't. No. So the only responses that ever seem to work in this regard are players leaving the park.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, for one, would have absolutely no problem with that tomorrow.
None at all. Because if you're
going to let these people in the ground and let them do it, you know, again, they're fucking kids did it last time. Like, it was...
Yeah.
They
use the same similar tactics. They're like, oh, well, they're just kids, they don't know what racism is. Oh,
you know, they were just booing it, booing because it was Rangers. They weren't booing for any other possible reason. Come on. something that's so deeply ingrained in your culture to hate people from other places, I'm pretty sure you're teaching that to your children. And that's that was it, live and in action. It's quite funny, though, that they got around that because it was a UEFA thing, wasn't it? They had to put kids. They couldn't put anybody else in the stadium. They had to put kids.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, you're a partial ground closure because what? Oh, because
And then that happens, and then UEFA can't do anything about it. So it's a very sneaky way of putting your racism into football, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then UEFA, of course, haven't done enough by evidence. You know, if you gave it a full ground closure, then maybe it would at least discourage some of that behaviour. Although I don't hold out much faith for any of those people. But the only way to punish these teams is by punishing the fans, because if they can't get to see their team, then that's the real punishment. Yeah. Short of throwing them out of the competition altogether.
Yeah.
No amount of money that gets fined to these clubs is really going to make much of a difference if they're still able to participate and have fans present.
Well, all UEFA's fines are like £50,000 and shit like that. Never, anyway, I mean, that's nothing. You know, I mean,
I'm pretty sure somebody said that we got. I could be completely wrong in this. I'm going very far back now. I haven't seen it in a long time. It was at least a comparison of how much we'd been fined for either pyro or somebody walking on the pitch at some point. Within recent years, the fine between that and the fine that Sparta received, I'm pretty sure, wasn't that far off.
Yeah,
I'd probably need somebody to fact check that, but
would it I think, you know, the good thing is we're probably going to get a baseline for what the figure is based on what the fuck's going on at Celtic Park tonight, because despite pleas from their board to respect what's going on in the Holy Land, which, my God, what a fucking statement that was. And also no cooperation with these fan groups, yet they're in a half hour early setting up display. I'm not sure how that, but again, we might get an idea of what the fine would be for any future action as far as UEFA goes. So at least we got that to look forward to.
I'm going to guess it won't be. Yeah. it won't be any kind of fine that Celtic are particularly worried about. No. And it certainly won't be, you know, what we've experienced in the past or other clubs have experienced before, where they have partial ground closures. That won't happen either. So
no.
And that's the problem with these things, because they always set a precedent, don't they? They're never gonna react to something in a different way and say, oh, sorry, our bad. We didn't give out a proper punishment in the past, but now we're going to. They don't even go that far. It's just, well, this is what we've done in the past, so we'll keep doing it. Which, like I said, doesn't change anything, does it? No nominal fee for a club that's competing in Europe, which pretty much every club, if not all, can easily afford.
Yeah.
Doesn't even register.
Nope. Well, that's it. Like I said, tomorrow, of course, if you're traveling, well, you're probably already there by now. If you're traveling late and you're listening, be safe by all means. Please be fucking safe. Don't get your head caved in by these fucking lunatics. By the way,
well done, Rangers, for having the ticket collection. What, a 25-minute walk away from the gathering point?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah,
fucking brilliant. Yeah.
Galaxy brains involved in that process. Well done.
Yeah.
Traveling groups, though. Traveling groups.
Yeah, travel in groups.
At least we said that.
An extra, 2 miles through the town that the police are warning you not to walk through at all. Jesus Christ.
One day, Shane, we'll have a normal day where we can communicate effectively and do the right thing.
Yeah, zero days since our last nonsense, friends. 0 days since our last nonsense. So... yeah, no, that, like I said, that's it. Again, go check out our friends. Help them out. I'm getting more Crow Pod coming up here later this week. I'm sure I'll do a second-hand news. Probably not tomorrow after the match, because I've just been wearing my fucking voice out talking to everybody I can lately. So it's kind of starting to take it. Plus, I'm just, the weather sucks, and I'm fighting the, you know, just the decongestion medicine and fucking Benadryl and everything just to be able to keep functioning in some kind of normal capacity. So I might just enjoy the match tomorrow, hopefully, and just go about my business. So, but Danny will be back next week. We will have more Don't Ask Me No Questions next week. Like I said, if you haven't caught the stuff, we had a Second In News Monday, Full Crow Pod Tuesday, and of course the rebroadcast, I guess. I don't know. This isn't really a broadcast, but of my talk with Gordon Watson about the racism that is going to happen again. Because, yeah, it's just, fuck it, whatever. So, anyway, Danny, of course, you can find on Twitter at DJ_1872. Thanks again, buddy.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me again, Shane. Still don't follow me. Please don't. No, nobody did that last week.
No.
Still don't do it this week.
That's good listenership right there. Oh, man. Nope, and that's it. We'll talk to y'all soon. Bye. Some people call me the space cowboy.
I mean, you can't even fucking serious at that.